is the Trade Finance Distribution Initiative podcast, home to the growing business community of trade finance stakeholders and institutions, making this asset class investable. I'm Andy Duckworth, and this podcast we're featuring a new member of the TFDI, Clifford Chance. Clifford Chance is one of the world's largest law firms, headquartered in London. It has world-class resources across 32 major financial centres worldwide. Paul Landless is a partner in derivatives and structured products at Clifford Chance and is going to tell us more. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Andy. Thanks for having me here.
No problem. Good to have you. Now, before you tell us more about Clifford Chance, tell us about yourself and your journey to where you are today.
So I sit in our sort of financial markets group, really bringing together our lawyers in the derivative space, in the structured debt space, but also in our wider fintech efforts around how we're combining technology solutions and innovations with areas of finance. And very much in my space, very much enjoying working across all the different areas between structured capital markets, as well as digital trade, as well as looking at financial regulatory questions around and legal questions around digital assets and tokenization, and very much had started as a classic pre-Lehman securitization CLO lawyer, and then after Lehman, whilst being in Hong Kong, very much focused on insolvency litigation regulation, as we all were, as all lawyers were after Lehman. But having been in Singapore since 2012, increasingly focused around the opportunities of more efficient payments, more efficient technology use cases, and looking around modernizing legacy systems and bank infrastructure, as well as wider trading infrastructure. So the promise of tokenization and digital assets, the promise of superior data analytics and having data strategies around good data lineage between systems and data lakes, and then sort of driving that into the globe, seeing other markets like Hong Kong, Dubai, looking at crypto markets more broadly, the opportunities around digital assets. And since moving to London over a year ago, watching London's own response to how to modernize its capital market space with digital bonds, but also looking at the digital trade agenda and how London, with the UK, really driving this effort around digitalized trade finance more globally.
And hopefully we'll pick up on some of those points later in this interview. But first, Clifford Chance is clearly a very prominent law firm. But for those of us who perhaps don't know so much about you, can you tell us more about Clifford Chance, your presence around the world and expertise?
Well, I like to say our motto is always to try and be first and be there in the newest transactions and developments of the day, and certainly around digital trade and around modernizing trade finance. This is an area that we are very excited about. The firm, like many law firms, has kind of three main business units, three main areas of sort of revenue activity. Our practice areas, firstly, our corporate teams looking at a lot of corporate M&A and wider transactions, embracing our real estate or technology teams as well. Sitting alongside our finance and capital markets teams, our global financial markets sort of engine, that business piece. And then also, thirdly, our risk teams looking at dispute resolution and risk-related areas, as well as regulatory investigations and wider activity around arbitration, and also managing geopolitical risk, particularly with sanctions, etc. And I think when it comes to technology, our philosophy is to think about all these three areas of our business, and every lawyer and every team needing to be fluent and literate with how technology and innovations are changing their transactions, changing their clients, and changing the sectors that all those lawyers are working in. So each of those three teams are part of our umbrella tech group offering. We have a sort of horizontal umbrella that really embraces all our lawyers and moves forward to say this is no longer an area that should be restricted to particular lawyers who had always supported our corporate M&A teams. Issues around digital assets, so issues around digital finance is relevant to all our teams in some way, and very much going forward. I'm lucky to be one of the partners helping to lead our tech group efforts and drive our fintech practice in particular around really supporting clients with their wider corporate technology requirements, with finance and capital markets transactions, or with risk-related areas, particularly as we start to integrate AI into day-to-day operations, or we have very systemic dependencies by regulated players on unregulated players. Operational risk is now an existential question that dominates boardroom thinking. So we're thinking in a very collective way as a practice, as a firm, but always wanting to work in an agile fashion globally and wanting to be operating as a single team unit, bringing together different lawyers and different teams worldwide to help our clients day to day.
Great. And I hope to ask you about some of those fintech elements later in this podcast. But first, and I think relevant to a lot of our listeners, how does Clifford Chance help new entrants in trade, such as SME-focused non-bank lenders?
Well, definitely, we talk a lot about fintech, but I tend to talk about tech fin equally, and trying to make sure that some unregulated businesses that are sort of corporate startup businesses and non-bank entities who are arriving into a sort of financially regulated, very, very regulated space with financial activity is fit and proper and match fit for that future, match fit for that regulatory setting, match fit for the levels of governance and supervision that they'll be experiencing, but also match fit for the types of partnerships and collaborations and arrangements and integrations that those clients, those startup businesses are having to undertake when moving forward in their strategies to distribute their products or maximize their services or increase adoption and volume with their offering. So certainly how those businesses are twinning with very sophisticated, heavily regulated and traditional players is important as to how we sort of support those businesses, not only with their sort of launch and their day one setup, but their sort of ongoing trajectory so that they are ready for that future state. And we help those clients with everything they need to operate day to day, to develop and launch their products, but also in those relationships I'm talking about as to how they're going to be managing a challenging partner with very particular compliance requirements, or having to manage an environment that's incredibly sensitive and increasingly intrusive about operational risk management, etc. So supporting those businesses and almost future-proofing them is really, really critical to what we do. And we're always thinking about not only how do we execute to get these clients airborne now, but also can we future-proof them by bringing market intelligence, by bringing horizon developments, by sort of thinking ahead around how are others dealing with these issues, or what are the sorts of things that are going to be asked of them in the future. So that horizon thinking twinned with the sort of day one execution is critical to what we do in supporting those new businesses.
And I suppose, Paul, on the other hand, can institutional investors such as pension funds and family offices also rely on Clifford Chance for legal advice, legal guidance in trade and working capital finance?
Absolutely, yes. One of the interesting things about us as a business, as a firm, is that we're bringing together deep expertise and history and understanding of what are the sort of sell side, dealer, bank side requirements or product approaches or structuring techniques that have been conducted in the past with the particular requirements and ambitions of financial investor and other particular clients that are facing those banks that are investing in those products, are looking to take on key exposures or provide certain types of liquidity or capital and funding, and to do so with a very sensitive understanding of those funds clients and a strong understanding of the regulatory environment that they are operating in, which is very very distinct from how banks operate as well. So bringing together the product know-how, understanding those clients, but also powered by a strong financial regulatory practice that's very calibrated to those funds clients is something that really sets us apart as a firm, and it's something where we can offer a lot to those clients. And like many firms, to do so in a jurisdiction agnostic way, we're able to be there for those clients across different markets, alive to a Luxembourg requirement or a other requirement in the US, or what might a Hong Kong or Singapore distribution requirement be, or a disclosure requirement be. So thinking about that geographical range, but also bringing our product and wider market experience to those clients is really critical and a major differentiator for us.
This is the Trade Finance Distribution Initiative podcast featuring Paul Landless from Clifford Chance. And this is probably a good time to remind you about our big news, the TFDI's big event, the 2024 Trade Finance Investor Day, is taking place at the 5-star Four Seasons Hotel on Park Lane in London. An event over 2 days, the 11th and 12th of November, a networking meal on the Monday night, followed by a full conference on the Tuesday. Tickets are on sale right now. Go to our website for all the details, including the speakers and the theme, tradefinancedistribution.com. Now, Paul, back to you. Has there been any important legal developments in trade finance? I know you probably want to mention the Electronic Trades Documents Act, but what's next? What's on the horizon?
Well, I'm not going to mention. This is probably going to be the first digital trade podcast. I'm not going to talk about it. We've all been opening champagne corks and celebrating a breathtaking piece of legislation. And I would simply just say, for such a significant moment, it's probably the shortest piece of legislation you'll ever see. And I think there's one piece of Parliament statute to be reading. It's probably that one. There's only 2 pages. So it's a good one to sort of start off with. But I didn't want to get into it in any detail other than to say, you know, what is next? And where do we go from here? To remind everybody, the legislation is actually simply following a UN standard. It's a UN model law, a kind of off-the-shelf proposal or template law that other jurisdictions can use and move forward with. So the question I have is, who is going to follow and what is next, and what are the other pieces of the legislation that for the first time will now allow you to rely on an electronic version, electronic record of a trade document? You know, no longer do we need the paper to know where goods are, or to make an insurance claim, or to arrange logistics or shipping arrangements. We can live an increasingly electronic life from a legal perspective. And so that reduction of friction between borders is the key around how many other countries are going to have this. Who is going to be next? Will we have enough countries worldwide with that modern electronic setting to celebrate electronic records as being equivalent to paper? And so my eyes are on, you know, Germany, my eyes are on France. I'm looking at developments in China, Japan, India's doing its own work. You know, there will be other jurisdictions who will modernize their legal system to say the electronic record is as good as the paper one. And that will then allow platforms and other use cases to be developed. So I think, you know, watch which jurisdictions will follow. And I'm keeping a close eye on Germany and France as key ones. And then I think the second question is, how do we make sure all these different countries with their new electronic sort of worldview around trade documents recognize each other? How do they say that each other's legislation for each other's platforms and each other's records with that data set in that location is as good as being set up locally? So will we get cross-border two-way recognition of each other's etas, if you will, and that will then create a sort of single pool, a single global frictionless from a legal perspective interchange of data and electronic records, and so that if there's an insolvency or some other incident that might mean that a local court could break away and reject somebody else's electronic records, that risk will go away. So I think that the next question is, will we see a lot more cross-border recognition of each other's electronic legislation? And I know that certain jurisdictions are working closely together. I've personally got a very close eye on how will the UK work more with other jurisdictions like Singapore into also the Middle East. And I think over time, we'll probably see a sort of super club of key jurisdictions that have not only developed their electronic trade legislation, but have also got cross-border recognition arrangements in play. And then I think beyond that, I think legally for me, it's seeing how we see digital assets and tokenization move forward around different types of trade financing assets, and how we start to see a lot more legal and regulatory support and change to underpin tokenization structures or tokenization models for risk distribution or for funding more broadly or for settling and carrying out sort of operational workflows day to day.
Great. And one other thing I'd like to get your thoughts on. The TFD initiative aims to make trade assets more accessible to institutional investors using asset-backed securitization.
Yes.
Do you see securitization acting as a useful bridge between banking and capital markets?
Absolutely. Twas ever thus. But certainly now I think we are seeing real impacts now caused by, you know, the post GFC efforts around intensifying the amount of capital that banks have to set aside against the risk of key exposures crystallizing into real losses, and some of those risk weights attached to those exposures are starting to bite around what sort of trade financing exposure now exists with what sort of SME, in what sort of jurisdiction, in what sort of sector. A lot of the capital charges will start to really change the sources of liquidity and funding, will change, if you will, the level of financial inclusion for sort of smaller trade supply chain linkages in the SME space. And securitization is a key way, not only of distributing some of that risk to the wider capital markets, but also allowing, you know, non-bank lenders and technology providers to arrive to facilitate that transmission of risk, but also maximize and reach out for the widest pool of free and free liquidity and capital that's available to ensure that that's being injected into some of these pockets of reduced funding sources and reduced liquidity because of some of that capital pressure. So I think securitization is going to be a key moment to bridge those non-bank sources of capital into the sort of frontline supply chain financing areas, but also as the mechanism on which a lot of technology and data-driven solutions can be constructed to actually accelerate that securitization and tokenization effort.
And Paul, I'd like to talk about tokenization now. How do you and the clients you advise see tokenization supporting the industry? I know Standard Chartered published a paper on this suggesting tokenization is going to be a game changer for the trade industry.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be a key moment around how we're fractionalizing exposures, how we're making certain types of trade assets or trade finance loans readily transferable, readily tradable, more liquid into a capital markets form, to a liquid form, as some type of security or some type of instrument, but also amidst the a technology infrastructure midship with the more modern best in class opportunities around data and platform based engines and other technology infrastructure and enterprise solutions.
And finally, Paul, you're co-head of the firm's global tech group. So that covers, as I understand it, digital assets, crypto, algorithmic trading, AI, smart contracts, all sorts of things. So a fascinating time to be deeply involved with all of this. What's this world looking like at the moment to you in terms of AI? What's exciting you?
And it's pretty exhausting, Andy. I mean, I think I think what excites me is just always having to have to read a lot. And I think very much on this side, we're defined by what our clients are doing and defined by what our markets are doing. And certainly, it's been difficult watching and catching each of the different themes and each of the different strategies of different clients as well. I think one area has been this question about marrying the increasing level of legal and regulatory scrutiny and compliance, whether it's privacy or it's AI or it's operational risk or operational resiliency, marrying that legal and regulatory response, that political response, that sort of taxation enforcement response, that there's a wider policy and legal and regulatory momentum that's making use cases and implementation and integration of various applications, whether it's AI or other types of blockchain solutions, particularly public permissionless blockchain solutions, more difficult. The one thing that I wonder about and I'm interested in is, do people have the resources? Do they have the risk management skills? Do they have the policy framework to integrate AI quickly and safely with a well-considered data strategy and legacy infrastructure and complex and brittle IT infrastructure is making a lot of that implementation effort very challenging. It's certainly going to be the case that it'd be impossible for a bank to be running two types of IT solutions, two systems in tandem. There's going to be a sort of flipping point as more and more institutions move across to a single and more modern solution. The one thing that I am keeping my eye on is quantum computing, because I think the idea of quantum computing speeds with a broad data lake, with broad data analytical tools, in my mind, will have far more business impact potentially than restrained and limited and awkward AI solutions, which bring with it incredible levels of governance, again, on that same data lake. And I wonder which technology innovation have the most immediate and most marked business impact, quantum computing speeds with that data lake or an AI solution with that data lake. And because of the crosswind that some of the AI tools bring with it in terms of increasing European and APAC compliance requirements, and we will see increasing US scrutiny. And I think the geopolitical focus and security focus of AI and quantum will be relatively equivalent, but that I suspect quantum computing may not have to suffer the same degree of attention, the same degree of privacy and other data compliance requirements that make AI integration more challenging and more risky for many many clients, many market participants. So we're yet to see the impact of quantum computing and how widespread it will be. But obviously, we're talking a lot about the impacts for encryption and cyber plans. But I think there's a real fantastic opportunity to see the level of impact of that data lake with that type of computer speed going forward for a wider range of sectors and client types.
Paul, a fascinating insight there. Thank you so much. Paul Landless, partner in derivatives and structured products at Clifford Chance. Thank you for speaking to the Trade Finance Distribution Initiative podcast.
Thank you very much, Andy. Thank you.
Thank you for listening today. Please subscribe to stay in the loop for all of our videos and podcasts. Follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter. They're the best places to keep in touch with everything we do. And don't forget to get your tickets to the 2024 Trade Finance Investor Day at the Four Seasons Hotel on Park Lane in London. The theme, Unlocking Asset-Backed Securitization. Go to tradefinancedistribution.com for all the details.